ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, if there's an insect in your house, creepy crawlies, what's your first reaction? For many of us, of course, you reach out and squash it, don't you? Whack it with a bit of a newspaper. If a newspaper, you've still got one of those in your house, or a slipper or a tea towel or whatever else is around, or maybe you spray it. My guest tonight would like to say, wag a finger, I think, and say, hang on, don't do that. Don't do that. See, I'm joined once again in the Nightlife Studios by Dr. Tanya Latty. Now, as you know, Dr. Latty was with us a while back and was so interesting about the subject of ants that we thought we had to hear more. So Tanya Latty is an Associate Professor of Entomology at the University of Sydney. Tanya, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Great to have you back. I'd like to say you scuttled in, but that'll be unfair. That's terribly unfair.
No, I'm happy with that.
Most of it. I think it's funny, isn't it? Because even though they're everywhere, omnipresent, a lot of us, you know, people don't mind birds. They love birds, you know, and people like most animals, actually. But insects get a bad rap.
Right, which is...
Why is that, do you think? What?
I don't know, and it's strange because insects are animals. So, you know, more than 75% of animal species are actually insects. So I would argue you cannot call yourself an animal lover if you don't love insects, because on average, everything's basically an insect.
Yeah.
I think we get socialized out of loving insects as we get older. You know, if you go to kids and show them a really cool giant stick insect or a giant burrowing cockroach, the kids get excited, they'll touch them, they'll talk about them. But as they get older, I think the adults in their life start saying, oh, you know, that's creepy, it's gross, it's dirty. And none of that is true. They're not creepy or gross or dirty.
No.
But we internalize that as we get older, and then we start to move away from insects, which is a great shame because they are fascinating.
Yeah. No, I know, you're right about that. When my girls were small, when they were little girls, I used to pick up beetles often, and you know, and because I don't have a phobia about it. I mean, I'm okay with them, and let them crawl over my hands or whatever. And I would, you know, give them. I don't mean ladybirds, but you know, big Christmas beetles and things like that. And they were fine with it then. But adults don't. I mean, if you handed one to an adult now, they would recoil, wouldn't they?
Some adults, a lot of adults will.
I know you wouldn't.
I'd be really excited if someone just came up and handed me a random beetle, but. Yeah. I think it's also a matter of taking that time. You know, when you're little, you walk around the world looking at everything and, you know, really paying attention to all the little critters. And as we get older, we stop paying attention. And I think the less we see them, the less we notice them, the more we start to get a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose, I mean, here's another thing that we kind of, we associate insects with lack of hygiene, don't we? We think... which is not always the – well, it's not hard – well, it's not the case, is it?
No, not at all. So, I mean, if you've ever even watched something like a cockroach, cockroaches spend half of their time cleaning themselves. They're actually very, very clean animals.
Is that right?
Yeah, watch a cockroach.
Hey, that's news. That's news to people. So cockroaches are clean.
Yep, flies too. You watch a fly, they spend heaps of time grooming their legs and cleaning their antenna. They're not inherently dirty.
Yeah.
I think that the association comes because when we see something like, you know, a pile of dung on the street or something, and there's flies all over it.
Yeah.
But those flies are doing the hard work of breaking down that waste so that you don't have to step in that waste. So they're like nature's cleanup crew. They're not dirty themselves, but they are doing a, you know, somewhat dirty job of getting rid of all that
waste.
I know,
but if a fly's been on a, you know, on a turd not long ago, Tanya, and then it's landing on me, I'm not happy about that. Or are you saying the fly's cleaned itself up in the meantime?
The fly has probably landed and spent a lot of time cleaning its legs and cleaning its antenna, so I'm sure it's possible, but it's not something you need to be worried about
really?
At all.
Okay.
No.
I hadn't thought about that. Okay. No way of checking, of course, is there? What about cockroaches? See, cockroaches are we'll get on to more interesting insects in a second, although maybe there aren't anymore. The cockroaches are one of those insects that people have an absolute phobia about. Now, my view's always been, I mean, there are cockroaches in my house. Stop it, people. The house is perfectly clean. But they just are a thing, it seems to me, in the environment. And I'm not saying they're there all the time, but they, you know, they come and go. But I've had visitors from overseas who are just appalled, actually, particularly North Americans.
Yep.
And they were appalled. They were in the house and said, you know, I can't believe that you would even allow this to happen and what's going on. And because they're associated with with what? With lack of hygiene and poverty and grossness, are they?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's an attitude that's been imported. So I'm from Canada originally.
I know,
and you never see cockroaches inside. But that's also because it's freezing cold outside for a large portion of the year. So there's no source population. Mm. We're very lucky to live in a place that has beautiful warm weather most of the year. But that comes with the fact that there's going to be more insects and more cockroaches. So the difference between, you know, somewhere like Canada, when you have an infestation of cockroaches, that usually is associated with some hygiene issues. Here, that's just a day that ends in Y. You're going to have cockroaches in your house.
Yeah, because I was looking at an ad, well, it was a while ago. It was an ad for toothpaste, I think it was. It might have been toothbrushes. But it had, you know, it had late at night, you know, and then there was a spotlight on a big brooch crawling over someone's toothbrush. And the idea, of course, is that you're appalled. But you're saying you shouldn't necessarily be, because why? They're not dirty anyway.
No, they're not that dirty. And honestly, out of sight, out of mind, that sort of thing is probably happening and we don't notice.
Yeah, yeah.
So no, it's not something you need to freak out about.
They don't spread disease, is it?
No. So, I mean, we call things like cockroaches and flies mechanical vectors of disease, which means that it's possible for a cockroach to run across, say, some rotting meat and then run across your cockroach or your toothbrush, rather.
Yeah.
And there's a small chance that it can move bacteria around. So that is a thing that can happen. Is it a thing that I'm particularly concerned about? Absolutely not. It's not, generally speaking, a huge problem.
Okay. So the fact that the cockroach crawled over my toothbrush, because you might think, well, it's probably happened anyway.
Well, this is it. It's probably happened. You didn't know. You're fine.
But you shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I mean, I might rinse off my toothbrush, but it's certainly not the case that I'd freak out.
Yeah, interesting. 1-300-800-222 is the number. If you want to grab a spot on the board, Tanya Laddie knows a lot about insects. So give her a push. She's from Canada. So she's, you know, she's one of us, really. Canadians are very like us, as we know. Leonie from Cavendish in Victoria. Hi, Leonie.
G'day. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
And thank you for being a professional entomologist. One learns heaps professionals. Just out of curiosity, what do you know about pseudoscorpions in Australia, aside from the fact that the only ones I've ever found are really small?
Oh, that's very cool. I mean, I don't know heaps about pseudoscorpions, but I love them. They're very, very cool. They're these tiny little invertebrates. Like the name suggests, they look like scorpions. They've got the pinchers at the back.
Yeah.
Many of them have this really cool behavior called foracy, which means that, you know, they're quite small. It's hard for them to move around. And so they'll hitch rides on other insects. So you'll see them, say, attached to things like flies, sometimes other large insects, beetles, being moved around. We also frequently find them in things like honeybee hives.
I read somewhere or other that the toxins that they've got, of course, not having the back stinger tail, are on their front claws.
Interesting. I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, I haven't heard that they've got any particular venom. They might.
Mm.
I mean, they are tiny little, often tiny
little
predators.
Do we have actual scorpions in Australia?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I used to live up at Cooperpedia as a kid, so no.
Yeah, they're mostly out in the desert, aren't they?
Oh, they're all around. They're in a few different places.
What about they're not crawling over my toothbrush? Toothbrush, are they?
Probably not.
I have found the pseudoscorpions years ago. I actually love arthropods.
Mm.
And I flipped over one of the driveway boulders, and there was this creature, and it was lacking the back stinger tail. And because they're exoskeleton rather than interior skeleton the way we are, I know that with all arthropods, if the skin gets damaged at all, they'll die fairly quickly because they bleed out so quickly. And I'm thinking to myself, you poor scorpion, you're going to die. Why? What happened? So I grabbed it and put it in a jar, and it was still going quite a few days later, but it was too small for me to feed it anything. And this is something that's annoyed me since then. What do I feed them?
I think many pseudoscorpions are predators, but the things they're eating are like mites, like really, really tiny things. I'm not sure if any of them are detritivores, so that eat rotting stuff. Not 100% sure. They're one of those groups of arthropods that unfortunately don't get studied nearly enough. So a lot of things about their ecology are just unknown, but they're really, really fun to look at. And they are harmless. They can't hurt us.
Mm.
Oh, good. So I can actually cuddle one.
Thanks, Leonie. See ya. Thanks, Leonie. 1-300-800-222. You're not getting much support about your views on cockroaches, Tanya, on the text line.
So give me time. We'll get there.
No, so you're not getting much support. Are white ants insects, is my texter.
Yeah, so I'm assuming by white ants we're talking about termites.
Yep.
Yes, and termites are a type of insect. In fact, scientists have found that the termites are essentially just a kind of social cockroach.
Is that right?
Yeah, okay. So they're cockroaches that have evolved to become live in colonies and then live in wood.
And live in wood, I was just getting back to this kind of phobia about insects. I suspect a lot of it's also when, as we get older, we think everything in nature is trying to do us in some way or another. And for some reason, we have it particularly in for insects, maybe because we think we think everything's going to bite us. But in fact, there aren't that many things that bite us.
No, most insects aren't going to hurt you. Yeah. Many of the ones that can sting will let you know. They'll be brightly colored. They'll have stripes. They'll have something to kind of indicate that they're dangerous. Uh-huh. And no insect is targeting you to attack unless it's trying to eat you. So mosquitoes, different situation. Most of the other ones are not trying to hurt you. They just want to get away. And if you catch them, maybe they sting. Hmm. But that's because we're so much bigger than them. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid. But no, insects are not out to get you. Neither are spiders.
One of my texters says, I never have cockroaches. I've been complimented by pest inspectors. No food in the bins, all good waste in the fridge and so on. Look, I think so I don't have to spray. I think that's great. I don't spray that much, Tanya, because some years ago I remember doing an interview about insects generally and, well, the environment generally, and the entomologist who was then on the program with us said that – you know, almost all people who study insects say the insect load, as it were, as a descriptor of the number of insects in the world, is falling.
Yes.
You know, in some cases quite dramatically because of the widespread use of insecticides.
Yeah, this is a really big worry. Yeah. Unfortunately, we haven't been tracking insect populations over enough time to know exactly what's happening. But every time people look, they tend to start to see these declines. And I think one of the best examples in Australia are the Christmas beetles.
Yeah.
You know, almost everyone I talk to remembers there being lots of Christmas beetles 20, 30 years ago. And we rarely see them in the cities now. So, you know, something has changed. And that pattern repeats again and again all over the world where, you know, insects that used to be really common and just part of everyday life don't seem to be as common anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge risk because insects do everything in our ecosystem.
Yeah.
Our civilization is completely built on their six little shoulders. Yeah. And it's a huge risk to lose those populations.
Mm. Yeah. John from Long Jetty says, Phil and Tanya, I live in Long Jetty on the Central Coast. I've observed a massive decline in moths and flies and ants, etc. It's like a dead zone. You know, what might explain this? Well, this is what it's often due to agriculture, isn't it? And the widespread use of insecticides in agriculture.
It's due to a lot of things. So it's probably not the case that there's one smoking gun. It's the combination of broad spectrum insecticides, massive amounts of habitat loss, you know, climate change, invasive species, all of these things kind of working together. And because every insect species is different, different insects are going to have different threats.
Yeah, okay. My theory about scorpions just being in the desert has been comprehensively exploded on the text line too. I know it wasn't your theory, Leonard, but Jane in Hobart says there's scorpions in Hobart. Okay, I give up. Dan from Reservoir. G'day, Dan.
Oh, g'day. How you going?
Pretty good.
Hey, I've just got a question about cicadas. I know it's not really cicada season down in Melbourne anyway.
Mm.
But whenever I hear them, I'm always trying to find out where they are. And I'm not sure if they're making that noise when they're in their little burrows in the ground or if they're actually already up a tree somewhere or on a plant or something. Whereabouts, or do they make the noise all the time wherever they are?
No, so it's the adults that make that sound. And so when they're nymphs, so babies, they live in the soil and they're incapable of making that noise. And then as they emerge as adults, they kind of make those big holes, crawl out of the ground, and then climb into a tree and start yelling at the top of, making these really, really loud noises to attract females.
Hmm.
So it's the males you're hearing, and it's the adults in the trees. They are very, very difficult to locate. It's really hard to find them just by sound alone. And that's probably something they've evolved to keep themselves safe from predators.
We had one time we were camping in a place called King Lake, and it just happened to be, you know, 1 in a 7 year event or something. And we got up in the morning and there was just cicadas everywhere. It was quite amazing. We were just walking around thinking, what the hell? It was a bit spooky for the kids, actually. Yeah. But there was just so many. And that was wonderful. I haven't seen anything since.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love those years where we get lots and lots of cicadas. It's just beautiful.
They are amazing big insect, aren't they? Because that's the other thing. Thanks, Dan. That's great. We think of insects as little, and generally they are. There's a theoretical limit to their size, I guess, isn't there, because of the fact of how they, you know, live and breathe.
Yeah, there are a few ideas about why insects aren't enormous. Yeah. One of them is the material that their exoskeleton is made out of. Right. It doesn't seem to scale very well. So as they get bigger, they essentially get more fragile. The other possibility is their respiration system, because insects don't breathe with lungs through their mouth like we do. No. They have something called spiracles, which are little holes along the sides of their bodies. And those lead to a series of tubes that get smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's how oxygen gets into the body. You know, that system works really well if you're small. It gets really hard to keep your tissues oxygenated when you're large using that kind of a system.
Because do they have a circulatory system? Not really.
They have an open circulatory system. So if you imagine you've got the body, and blood sort of sloshing around in there. They do have a heart, but there's no blood vessels. There's not, you know, veins and arteries. So
Okay. So that's right. So they oxygen and all that sort of stuff is absorbed from the outside.
Yeah, through those spiracles and into that tracheal system.
That's right. So if it get too big, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, that's the thought. I mean, again, these are all sort of thought experiments, but that's the theory about why they're not bigger. And they were bigger in the past. So if you go back to before dinosaurs.
Well, we know that from the fossil record.
Yeah, there used to be giant dragonflies, giant millipedes, all these.
Well, how did they work? We don't know.
Well, that's the question. I mean, the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere was higher then, so that maybe helped them to get bigger, but we don't really know.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah, because that's right. There were big dragonflies, like a meter long, weren't
they? Yeah, which is fantastic, with a meter wingspan.
Gee, that means there'd be a meter long cockroaches with. Oh, dear.
Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Radio.
And I'm with Tanya Latty. Tanya's an entomologist at the University of Sydney. And we're talking about insects. Gee, the lack of love for cockroaches is continuing here, Tanya.
Oh, no.
The lack of... Someone said here, now where is it? That's right. This is Jan. A cockroach crawled into our new dishwasher and was electrocuted. The cockroach died, but it cost us $1,000 to replace the motherboard. not happy, Jan.
No. I mean, it feels like that ended quite badly for the cockroach too, though.
Are trapdoor spiders a type of funnel web spider?
No, they're different. So trapdoor spiders, you know, like their name suggests, they've got a tunnel and then this little trapdoor.
Yep.
Which they can close over to seal their tunnel, but they're in a different group of spiders than the trapdoors or than the funnel webs.
Are they poisonous, trapdoors?
I mean, they're venomous in the sense that they have venom, but that venom is not medically significant as far as we know. So it doesn't typically cause that much harm.
I was saying earlier, a fun fact, which I learned from you, about spiders and biting and all that, is that no one's died from a spider bite in Australia for 50 years. You know, I've been going around bragging about this fun fact for a few days now, and no one believes me. Everyone is convinced that people die from spider bites all the time, but they don't.
No, and that's the thing. Our sense of risk is so overblown for spiders. Nobody's died of a redback bite since 1956.
1956,
and a funnel web 1981. So huge amounts of time.
That's when the antivenin for funnel webs was developed.
That's right.
Because it is quite poisonous, isn't it?
Yeah, no, a funnel web bite is definitely a medical emergency. Yeah. That's a problem. But we have excellent antivenom services in this country.
Yeah.
And that means if you are unlucky enough to get bitten, you'll very likely be able to access that antivenom.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is not, you know, in terms of the number of people that get killed by spiders compared to things like dogs, you know, cows, you know, kangaroos, so much higher, and yet it's the spiders that we're scared of.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. And we shouldn't be, because to all intents and purposes, they don't present a risk.
No, you're very, very unlikely to be harmed by a spider.
Yeah, including big huntsman spiders, which, of course, everyone just has a total panic about. But that's because big huntsmen are furry, and that's a well, it's a that's that. I don't know why. Is it Hollywood or whatever it is convinced us that because we like furry cats and dogs, but we don't like furry insects. Now, why is that?
I don't know, and it's a pity because huntsmen are your gentle giants. You know, they're not going to hurt you. They can bite, but only if you really grabbed one and harassed it. They don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
They're super timid, and they'll eat the cockroaches. So for all the cockroach haters, get more huntsmen because they'll take care of your cockroaches.
Is that right? They'll take on a corgi.
Yeah, they sure will. They sure will. They're wonderful house guests. You know, they pay for their rent by killing your cockroaches.
So they'll pounce on a corgi.
Mm-hmm.
And get it by the throat, as it were. Gee, I like that. I'd like to see that. 1-300-800-222. Catherine says cicadas, we're missing them in Perth nowadays. Yeah, it's really special. Graham from Perth. Hello, Graham.
G'day, Phil. Hi, Tanya. My question is, I've just lost my train of thought.
Yeah, the question is, have you been bitten by a cicada or something, Graham?
No, the question is, what are your thoughts about insects being used as a food source for the human race?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think insects are already used as a food source for many cultures of people. And many parts of the world incorporate insects into their diet. And look, insects, generally speaking, high protein, you know, reasonably nutritious depending on the species. I think one of the big benefits of insects as a protein source is that they are a lot more sustainable than things like livestock or poultry because they have a much smaller carbon footprint. They don't produce as many of those greenhouse gases as livestock do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we can just get over that kind of instinctive disgust about eating insects, you know, we could be opening up a very sustainable way to produce insects. I think the one caveat I have is that a lot of, at least my thinking, kind of stemmed from the idea that we can also raise insects much more humanely than we can a lot of livestock.
Yeah.
But there is data and research coming out now to suggest that in some insects may actually be able to perceive pain or pain-like states. And if that's the case, then we do need to be very careful about how we start to scale up that insect production so that we do it in a humane way.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever eaten one, Graham?
No, I'm sticking to my porterhouse steak.
You could have a bit of granulated, I don't know, what, grasshopper?
Mealworms.
Well, right away.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Graham. Bye bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Barb in Kuranda in far north Queensland. Have you been to Kuranda?
Oh, I love Kuranda. Kuranda is one of my favorite places.
Yeah, it's a great place. Beautiful place in far north Queensland. Up near Cairns. I've got to text your guest to show my support for insects, a major lifetime love and interest of mine. There was an amazing catadid on the door. Is that like a stick insect, is it?
No, it's a little bit more like a grasshopper.
Yeah. What's the truth about white-tipped spiders? Gee, this has been a topic over the years. White-tipped spiders causing cellulitis if bitten by one.
Yeah, so the best data we have at the moment suggests that that's not the cause.
That's not the case. Yeah.
No, that you can get cellulitis from any time you get a skin break, but there's no evidence that getting bitten by a white-tailed spider increases that risk.
Mm. Andrea from Australind in WA. G'day. Hi, Andrea. Sorry, you've been waiting on there.
Evening, folks. It's strange, isn't it, how cockroaches always give you a shock when you see them.
I know. I don't know why it is, but I think we're conditioned to it. We just think cockroach equals bad, whereas Tanya would say not. That's not the case.
No.
Well, I had a friend, and she said cockroaches have mothers. You must understand that, and she was very sympathetic.
Did she say that every cockroach has someone's mother or son or daughter?
Yes. Tanya, I wanted to ask you, in Darwin, I often used to come across, or not that often, but shock me, at night time, you go to turn a bedroom light on, and there'd be this horrible black thing on the wall. It was about 3 or 4 centimetres long, sort of just 8 legs, black, sort of horned-looking thing. It was so ugly, it probably wouldn't hurt you, but would you have any idea what it was? I never did find out.
Oh, not off the top of my head. 8 legs would be spider, most likely. So some type of spider.
Perhaps it was 6. Perhaps I can't count.
It can be hard to tell at night. I'm not sure what it was. I'd be very curious to find out.
But, yeah, I feel bad because I don't know. No, I scooped them up and put them outside, I think, something like that. But I never got over the shock of them. So that just before you go to bed, you come across this horrible, creepy-looking thing.
thanks
for the program.
Thanks, Andrea. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening and being part of it as well. Dave from Mossvale. G'day, Dave.
Yes, just that, I'm in my 70s, but growing up in the 50s and early 60s,
yeah.
Just driving anywhere at night, the amount of insects on the windscreen, and you have to stop and clean the windscreen and all this sort of stuff and everything, quite irritating. But now you can drive the country roads and everything and you get very few insects.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Dave, everybody would say this too. That it used to be the case and now it's not. This is part of the problem we're talking about, you know.
Yeah, well, I agree earlier that it's basically insecticides farming, but also clearing of land and all that sort of stuff. But I had a little sort of document thing about Germany, and this guy did exactly that in his little VW Beetle.
Yeah.
He drove off around through Germany, and again, same problem.
No, it's true. It's true. Tanya, one of the things, thanks, Dave, one of the things that, you know, bothers a lot of people is that, you know, people think, you know, a bit like frogs are at the bottom of the tree, of life, as it were, and when they go, you know, it causes all these consequences. And, you know, should it worry me that if we've got fewer insects, I mean, are these the sort of canaries in the coal mine sort of thing? If our insect load collapses, does it cause a collapse with, you know, bigger and bigger animals all the way up the chain?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we should all be worried.
Yeah.
This is something, you know, that has, I mean, look, there's a lot of insects. They're not all going to disappear. But the problem is that insects interact with so many other organisms.
Yeah.
You know, if we think about pollination, a large proportion of our food and basically everything delicious is pollinated by insects. And it's not just bees. Chocolate, for example, is pollinated by a tiny little midge.
Yeah.
So it's the flies as well. We can think about waste management, so making sure that all of that waste gets buried and taken care of. There's predation. So the reason we're not overrun by all of these pest insects is because there's lots of predatory insects that help to keep those under control.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're feeding lots and lots of different animals. So, you know, we've got our tiny, adorable little pygmy possums up in the mountains, and they're depending on bogong moths for a large portion of their diets. We lose bogong moths, those animals don't have food. And that's true across, you know, across the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Insects really are supporting everything.
Yep, 1-300-800-222 is the number. John says maybe cars these days are more aerodynamic and the insects just fly off past the windscreen. Well, maybe.
I mean, that's actually one of the problems. So that's why we call it the windscreen effect, the idea that we're getting fewer insects on our windscreens. And part of the reason we don't use that as strong evidence is exactly that. Cars have changed.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult to know what's happening. But there have been studies where people have driven older models of cars at the same time as newer models and found that there's not a huge difference. So,
All righty. Des from Yokeen. G'day, Des.
Good evening. Now, I'm in my mid-80s and I can still feel the huntsman spider in my hand that a kid at school gave me when I was about 10. So I reckon what I do now is I try to introduce...
Hang on, you reckon it's the same huntsman?
No.
No.
Your friend won't like me because I try to introduce my... a huntsman to as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Like I just drop a telephone book on top of it.
Des. After all the talk, come on, Des. After all this conversation,
I just sort of sit there and say to myself, well, it's you or me, and it's not going to be me. So bye-bye.
No, Des.
Very, very, very interesting program.
No, thank you, Des. Bye-bye. Des, go to the corner and say 10 Hail Marys and 3 Our Fathers, all right? I know. Well, that's an example of what we're talking about, isn't it?
That's right. Poor huntsman just wanted to eat your cockroaches and then...
Yeah, they don't want to eat you. They don't want to eat you. Someone else said to me, it's the thing about cockroaches and also spiders is the way they scuttle. There's something about the movement That scares us, isn't there?
They're fast and they're a little erratic, so it's hard to predict where they move. And I think that can freak people out. And I think even entomologists will get startled by spiders. I mean, every now and then something will crawl out and I'll go, whoa. Yeah. The trick is to have that moment, but then it's what we do next that matters. So you don't have to squish it because it startled you. You can go, and then take a look at the animal and watch, how they groom, or watch how those huntsman spiders actually move.
Wayne in Thailand says, living in Thailand, I see insects of all descriptions for sale at the markets for food. My wife snacks on ants and sticky rice. Oh, there you go. Dave's nodding here too, because he's been in Thailand for quite a bit and he reckons ants are good. Michael in Hobart. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I'm wondering if your guest could give some information about big bed bugs and why are they found on some cruise ships?
Ooh, I don't know. Tanya?
This is a bit of a slightly traumatic one because I had bed bugs in a motel I was staying at just a few weeks ago.
Oh, really?
So been there. Bed bugs are what we call obligate ectoparasites of humans, which means they don't really live in the wild anymore. They are always associated with us.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. So they live in, bedding. They come out to feed, and that's how they get bigger. So they feed on us, they molt, get bigger.
What do they
bigger.
Eat when you say us? You mean?
Blood. They're blood feeders. So they come out and bite, just like a mosquito would.
Oh, okay. So they're like a mozzie. Night. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so you'll be lying in bed, and you look over, and, oh boy, there's bed bugs. Unfortunately, there seems to be a bit of an increase in the amount of bed bugs worldwide recently, and it's thought that it's partly due to the fact that they've become resistant to some insecticides, but also because some of the older insecticides, which were really good for killing them, were also quite toxic, and so were taken off the market. And so now we're starting to see these increases. Cruise ships, perfect environments for a bed bug. You have lots and lots of different people coming from all over the place, very likely to...
And there's a big turnover of people.
Exactly, bringing their luggage and their clothes, which may be infected with bed bugs. And then, once a population gets established, it can be a little tricky to get rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Have you had the misfortune, Michael?
No, thankfully. I've heard of them.
Yeah.
I mean, on the plus side, the one saving grace with bed bugs is that they don't vector any known diseases. So while they are annoying and they can be itchy, they're not a huge health concern.
So, I know how we're friendly to all insects here, Tanya, but I'm thinking maybe we're not to bed bugs, are we? Because they don't have any place in the wild anyway.
I mean... I don't love having bed bugs, but I kind of respect them.
But if their only purpose on earth is to eat us.
Yeah, but the purpose of an organism, is it
who eats
in relation to us.
What insects eat bed bugs?
I don't think anything eats bed bugs that I'm aware of, but really? They're still part of the ecosystem. They're parasites.
Hmm.
But yeah, they're not my most favorite insect, it must be said.
Aaron's in Cape York, way up north. G'day, Aaron.
How you going, buddy?
Pretty good.
Hey, I just got a question. We come up here because, for a holiday.
Yeah.
But we have these little green, they're like spiders, but they fly and they jump on you, but they're flying. Just wanting to know if you know what they are.
How big are they?
Oh, they're tiny. They're very, very tiny. Bigger than a fly, but they're a spider. Like a money spider, but they have wings.
Okay. Hmm. So they've got 8 legs, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just wondering what it was, that's all, because one of my kids had one on them, that's all, so and I went to go get it and it flew off.
Well, it wouldn't have been a spider. No spiders actually have wings, so it couldn't have been
No spiders have wings.
No, okay. Spiders don't, little baby spiders can produce little bits of silk and then fly off using that silk like a parachute, but they don't have wings.
But there's no such thing as a flying spider.
There is not. There is not. So... It does make me wonder what it would be.
No, it made me wonder too when I seen it because, I come from the Queensland, North Queensland, and, but seeing something like this is very different for me.
What colour are they, Aaron?
They're a bright green, very
bright. Well, that's easy. They're the Cape York death ant. Aaron. You're gone, Aaron. I reckon 2 to 3 hours.
Oh, no.
Yes, Aaron. Been nice talking to you.
Thanks, buddy.
Make sure you pack up the car properly, all right?
Oh, cheers, mate.
See you, mate. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Brett from Ipswich says, what's the possible benefit of mosquitoes, especially when they spread disease? Well, there are a food source, aren't they? Lots of insects eat Well, lots of animals eat mosquitoes.
Yeah, especially their larval forms. So the baby mosquito larvae live in water, and they're a source of food for things like fish and different amphibians as well.
Yeah.
There's a tiny bit of evidence that some mosquitoes may play a minor role in pollination, but to be honest, it's probably not that big a role.
It's minimal, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably not that big. And then the adults, of course, can feed other animals as well.
Hmm. I'm glad you raised pollination. That's because that's the thing. We know about the role of bees.
Hmm.
But lots of other insects pollinate, don't they?
Well, that's it. I mean, even within bees, I think when we talk about bees, most people think of the honeybee.
Yeah.
Honeybees are, they're interesting animals, but they are imported from Europe and other places. They're not native to Australia.
No.
Whereas we have over 2,000 native bee species here that are also important pollinators of many things. And then on top of the bees, we have flies. So many flies play a really important role in pollination. There are beetles that are very important pollinators. There are butterflies. And then there's this whole group of insects that come out at night, like the moths, that do nighttime pollination.
Okay, interesting. Scotty from Camden says, I flicked a huntsman from the inside of my car door, and accidentally he lost a leg in the process. I felt bad. Do legs grow back on spiders?
They can. So it depends on how old that spider was. Uh-huh. If it was a juvenile, so not full grown, the next time it sheds its exoskeleton, it can start to grow that leg back a little bit by bit. If it was already an adult, then it's probably not going to get the leg back. But huntsmen are reasonably good at compensating for the odd lost leg.
Okay. How many times do they shed the skeleton, a huntsman?
Oh, I don't know off the top of my head.
No, yeah. Phil, how did Tanya cope with big bed bugs recently?
I mean, I just looked over and went, all right, and then packed up all of my stuff.
I'm an entomologist.
Yep. I mean, the important thing if you do have that misfortune of encountering bed bugs is when you get home to make sure you put all of your clothes, hot water, and really important to put it in the dryer, as high as you can.
Because heat knocks them over.
The heat and the dry in particular dehydrates them, and that can prevent you from bringing them home. So that's what I did.
Hmm. Okay. Ken in Missouri, that's Missouri in America, says, when I moved to America, I was bitten by a plethora of chiggers. Have you heard of a chigger?
Yes.
A tiny, tiny insect, but the itchiness is insane. Are they related to bed bugs?
No, I believe those are a type of mite. So it's a little mite, so it's more closely related to something like a tick. And they burrow just underneath the skin and cause quite a bit of irritation.
Yeah, ticks aren't our friend, are they? Because they can cause some damage. Dan from Murrum Bateman. G'day, Dan.
Yeah, hello. How are you?
Pretty good. Rain. What do you want to ask about? Rain moths.
Last year I accidentally left the shed light on and woke up in the morning and there was just a plethora of all these moths, but they were big. They were like three-inch moths.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering I've only had it once in like 10 years. I was wondering what their life cycle is.
Yeah, so I don't know about rain moths specifically. At that size, I'd almost be guessing you might be dealing with a wood moth as well. And, like all moths and butterflies, they start off as eggs. The egg hatches into a caterpillar. That caterpillar will feed on usually plants, although there are caterpillars that feed on very strange things. Like there's one that lives in the nests of parrots, and there's some that live in ant nests. There's even some predatory caterpillars, which always kind of blows my mind. But generally speaking, they're mostly plant feeders. As they get bigger and bigger and bigger, eventually they do their final shed. So they shed their skin, create a pupa or a cocoon, and that's where they turn into like caterpillar soup, rearrange, and then emerge as a moth.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Dan. Thank you. We're talking insects with Dr. Tanya Latty, who's an entomologist at the University of Sydney. Why do insect sprays not actually kill insects, says Graham? Are they getting immune to them, are they?
It depends on...
They kill many insects, but...
It depends on the chemical. So there's lots of different types of insecticides. Mm. Most of the ones you buy in the shops are what we call broad spectrums, which means they will generally kill a large range of insects. Mm. But as we said, some have started to evolve resistance. And some insecticides are more targeted at particular groups. So if you spray the wrong insecticide on a particular insect, it may not kill it.
Mm. Glenn in Westmead says, hi, Phil and Tonya. People who cannot distinguish between etymology and entomology bug me in ways I cannot put into words.
That is a very clever joke.
That's a clever joke, Glenn. People who can't distinguish between etymology and entomology bug me in ways I cannot put into words. No, boom, boom, we'll pay that one, Glenn. When walking in the Pilbara, there was a swarm of green iridescent flying beetles with a W or an M on their shell, depending on the way you held them, around for 4 or 5 days and then disappeared. Any idea, Sistine?
Oh, no? Not off the top of my head. An M or a W?
Weird. You can't blame Tonya for not knowing every insect in Australia because, well, this here's another thing about insects is that there's no way we've named them at all, is there?
No.
How many species do you reckon we've yet to name in Australia?
Well, at best, we've maybe named 20% to 30%.
So is that all?
That's all. So I would bet that anybody anywhere in Australia could go outside to a green space and find an insect that doesn't have a formal name yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I remember interviewing a bloke in Canberra about this very fact, actually. He used to work on the garbage truck, but he was a very keen naturalist. I mean, that was his hobby. And on the weekend, he used to go out and he had a camera with a macro lens. Mm. And he loved taking photographs. And then he put the photographs up at the end of the day on his website. And he put a photograph up of a tiny spider that he'd found. Hey presto, no one had ever seen this before in the world ever. And anyway, after much to do, he was contacted by, I think it was a Canadian scientist or American scientist, and who said, you know, this is amazing because this spider is, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, and the spider is partly named after him.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be surprised how often that happens. And it's never been easier to discover species in the sense that we have all of these great tools. So there's macro lenses on our phones.
Hmm.
Once you take a picture, I'd really encourage people to upload it to a website called iNaturalist,
okay,
which is this wonderful
platform.
Is
it platform. The letter I or the word I?
The letter I. It's like, okay, little I, the, yeah, Naturalist. It's a wonderful platform that allows you to share those sightings, and there are plenty of scientists on there who will then go and say, oh, this is actually a new thing, or actually we think it's this. Okay. The app even has a machine learning algorithm that will try to identify your sighting as well. So it's a great way to start learning about the insects, and all of that data really, really helps us entomologists because, you know, we can't be everywhere in the country, but if we have all these eyes looking for new things, it really helps us with our data.
Yeah, why doesn't AeroGuard work anymore? Says my texter. Mozzies have probably got some resistance to it, haven't they?
Yeah, resistance seems to be cropping up in a lot of different insect populations, That could be one reason. But again, it could also be that that particular insecticide was not necessarily the right one for whatever you're targeting.
I think it used to be more effective than it is now, I must say. Richard, you're from Bundaberg, you've been waiting on there. Hello.
Yeah, g'day. Richard's my name. Years ago, hello, entomologist. I'm absolutely fascinated. Years ago, I had a property in the southwestern corner of New South Wales.
Yeah.
Now, a bardy grub was used for a preferred fishing bait.
A barley
they
grub?
They were $2 each. Live,
yeah.
And I set up some floodlights vertically on my veranda logs,
yeah.
And at a certain time of the year, I would attract many hundreds of moths, and I called it milk, which would drain down the logs and even form a pool at the base of
the moths
as they went into the ground.
Okay.
Now, I set up 44-gallon drums on the surface and with green branches and dead branches, so I introduced this milk and littered the 44-gallon drums and let the whole thing, sit for several years. And then with my tractor, in the existing surrounding sand and branches.
Where's this going, Richard?
Anyway, the whole thing failed. I assume because the 44-gallon drums got too hot the surface.
Mm. Probably, Richard. Okay. Very. Well, anyway, it's been an interesting adventure, that's for sure. Thank you. George says, George says, if humans are only aware of 30% of insects, then how can we know how many we've sadly extinguished?
Yeah.
Well, that's a point, isn't it?
This is probably one of the grimmer things to think about is that we are almost certainly losing species before we've even named them.
Yeah.
So there are species that, in fact, that have been identified and named after they've gone extinct because we find, say, fossil evidence of them, or we find them on in drawers in the museum and realize that they are no longer in the wild. And it's really, really sad to know that we've helped shuffle an insect off without even giving it the dignity of a name before we wiped it out is really pretty grim.
Yeah, Charlotte from Mount Dandenong says, I've just half an hour ago noticed 6 of my 51 photos of fungi on iNaturalist are included in projects. Some are unknown. Wow, I hope to get to name a few insects on the way. That'd be way cooler, says Charlotte. Well, it would be way cooler.
It would be, and yeah, congratulations on the fungi. I should say that iNaturalist, you can submit sightings of any living thing. So, I mean, I think insects are the best, but if you're into fungi or plants or whatever, please do. That's a huge
source. What's your favorite insect anyway? Can't let you get away with tonight without saying that.
I mean, that's like asking your favorite child. You can't really pick a favorite. There's so many insects and other invertebrates that I find completely fascinating.
Say the big household cockroach, and that'll really infuriate people.
They'll double down on the cockroaches.
Dear. I forgot to ask you about velvet worms, I didn't forget, but we never got to it because time has beaten us, unfortunately. But look, it's been absolutely fascinating, and thank you, Tanya.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll get you back at some point too when the insect load has got so great we have to get some answers. Thank you. Dr. Tanya Latty is Associate Professor of Entomology at the University of Sydney. And it is a bug's life, but she has it under control, as you heard.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.